they're spiraling just like you.
Hi, Sarah, welcome. Welcome to Spiraling. It's us, Katie and Serena. It's us.
We are here. It is us.
We are here. We are anxious.
We are anxious. We are thrilled to be with you today, though. We were just talking about how we feel extra grateful for Spiraling this week. So thank you if you're listening right now.
I really do. We've been getting some really kind messages about it, which like truly means so much. And I have been thinking about Spiraling a lot and talking about it and this project and how much it means to me. And I sent Serena a text last night and I was just like, I'm really grateful and glad we're still doing this. I posted on my Instagram, like the photo of the first day we recorded. And it was just so wild to see us.
My eyebrows were so dark. I love that photo so much. It was also so funny because I had this sweatshirt on that said feelings on it. And I just remember the sweatshirt was so scratchy, but I just thought it was really fitting for, because I was on Katie's podcast that day.
Oh, that's right. That's
not the correct. And I thought she would appreciate my feelings sweatshirt.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, that was like our first real one-on-one hang, because we were actually in a group chat with our friend Phoebe last week, kind of talking about another like random night in New York the three of us had. Where I feel like
proves that Katie and I have absurd memories.
Yeah. Phoebe had no recollection of that night.
She had no recollection. And Katie and I were like, yeah. And then like there was a guy in the corner who would iron patches onto your jean jacket. It was a kombucha panel, like all these things. Yep. She was like, what?
Yeah. Serena was like, you know this girl. It's this girl, blah, 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 blah. And I can tell you, I remember what I was wearing. I was wearing this turtleneck dress. I can tell you every single detail. Yeah. I wonder if do you think that nostalgia and anxiety and memory are connected?
I would be so curious because I'm going to ask my therapist who specializes in neuroscience, because I think there has to be something. I imagine those of us with anxiety have somewhat better memories because we like to fixate on things. So I bet we remember them because we're like holding them more tightly in our mind's eye and like turning them over and over again and again. Don't you think? Wouldn't that make sense?
Yeah, I really am curious. Can you report back next week's episode topic? I think is actually really, really good for this. And
our
anxiety expert, neuroscience, and advisor to the show Serena's therapist. I would really, really love to hear his thoughts on this, because I was actually just having a conversation with someone I haven't seen in a long time. And he kept saying like, I have such a terrible memory. I have such a terrible memory. And I walked away from that conversation being like, must be nice. Like, you know what I mean? It's
right. I think that proves our hypothesis, because I was just thinking about it and Logan has a terrible memory. And he's just not a remotely anxious person. So I think maybe we are onto something here.
Yeah, I think it might be gendered. I think it might be just different people. I think in the context that this person was saying, I'm like, ooh, that's kind of a cop out. Or like, I don't know. I was kind of under the, like, not in saying this in every situation and not with Logan necessarily, but like sometimes I think it's like, it can be damaging to remember like replaying things in your mind, that sort of thing. But, you know, shame or embarrassment for sure. Mm-hmm. But, and even nostalgia and romanticizing things, I don't think is that healthy. And just another end of the same, the other side of the same coin. But I think in some ways it's like, well, that's a cop out, like work on that. You know what I mean? Like if you are trying to like connect with people, yes. I think it's, you know, this is kind of that part of anxiety that I think you often talk about when we talk about, which, you know, I'm always happy to bring up on this, because we talk about not the negative parts, but the challenging parts so often, that you always make the good point of like the upsides of anxiety. And I think maybe that is one of them. That's like, I do, when someone tells me something, I usually remember it, and I'm like really good at remembering names. I'm really good, you know? And so it's like, well, you know,
that's a great silver lining. Let's hold on to that one.
It's a pretty good one. We should make a new segment of the show that's like silver linings of anxiety.
So, That can be part of our merch. Somebody reached out to me and was like, I am down with the spiraling merch. So we have one interested buyer.
Yes.
We should, based on our track record, we should definitely do it just for the one person.
Yeah, for that one. So the three of us have sweatshirts.
Yes. Shall we spiral?
Yeah. Well, I can go first because I have another magical thinking thing that will lead into my spiral that I meant to tell you during our pre-show, which is non-recorded and private, where we talk about the spirals that we cannot talk about on the show. But I meant to tell you this. I went to a concert, which is part of my spiral, and it's at the Lodge Room in my neighborhood, which is like right by my apartment. And it's this like really great venue. And I looked on my way out at who was playing coming up over the next couple of months, because I was like, oh, it was my first time going there, obviously, or somewhat obviously because of the pandemic. And I was like, I want to see like every show here. Like, it's so great and also convenient because I can walk there. And I was looking, and this podcast that I love that my friend's brother co-host is doing a live episode there. And I was like, wow, maybe someday we do a live episode of Spiraling and it could be there.
Yes. Let's make a vision board this year. We'll do all.
Okay. I thought you'd never ask. Oh man. Okay. So back to the Lodge Room. I'm at this concert. This is the spiral. So okay. I was meeting a friend there, and I actually had some time to kill. For once in my life, I was like overly early, but I don't even know how to say it. That's how rare it is. And mm-hmm. I went to go get a drink with someone else. And then I was going to meet her there. And so I was walking and I'm, you know, firing off voice texts to lots of people at the same time, because that's just my MO. And I'm walking, I'm like listening to this band that we're going to see in a little bit. I'm like feeling really good. And I sent her a text, like explaining who I was meeting for a drink. And I was like, hey, I'm going to be right there. This is what I said in the voice text. I'm just going to end up meeting you there. You don't have to pick me up because I'm going to be over there. Real twist in my plan. I'm meeting, blah, 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 blah. And I explain who it is. And I say something like I wouldn't want him to hear, basically. And I'm also texting him to be like, hey, on my way, where are you? Like, whatever, like logistics. So if you don't know this about voice texting, watch out if I get your number, because you'll learn very quickly.
Katie loves a voice text. We've discussed this in the past.
Yeah. And they disappear after you send them. So, you know, I couldn't check if my text to Meg had like gone through, but I didn't think anything of it. I like have a drink with this person. It's great. I go to the concert. I'm like having the best time. We like got dinner before. It's like such a great show, and more on that in the highs. And I, at the last song of the encore, I suddenly, and this is the reason I'm telling this spiral, is because it's such a small, like tiny spiral and really not a big deal. But I did like feel my physical anxiety so intensely, like, and very quickly, and then release, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And suddenly in the last song, it pops into my mind, like, because I had said to Meg when I got there, I was like, we just like ran into each other and she's like, oh, you're here. And I was like, oh, did you not get my text? And she was like, oh, no, I didn't listen to your text. And so I explained to her what I said in the text in person. And so I'm now at the concert trying to enjoy the last song, but instead I am deeply spiraling because I'm like, oh, she didn't hear the text. That means she didn't get the text. That means I definitely sent the text. And I'm going through in my mind trying to remember what I said exactly. And I'm like, it definitely went to him for sure. That's definitely what happened to that. And then I'm going through the scenarios of like, okay, he heard that. That my tail's between my legs now. That's just going to be what happens with that. Like tomorrow when I see him, I'm going to, okay. All right. Like I'm really going through. I'm like not at all thinking it didn't happen. And I also don't want to like interrupt her enjoyment of the last song. So I can't be like, hey man, can I like see your phone? Like, is there any chance you can like tell me if you got that message right now? It's like loud. So I'm just like, there's nothing I can do. I just got to ride this out. I got to feel this like feeling in my body. It was the longest encore. They did like 4 or 5 songs.
Oh my God. I mean, that I have definitely sent texts to the wrong people today. And Katie was giving me another example of what she had done. And I was telling her that I meant to send a DM of a meme to Logan. And I accidentally sent it to like somebody that follows me instead. And they were like, I don't think this was meant for me. I was like, correct. It was not.
So but there's funny. Like,
I mean, I it doesn't sound, even though we don't know exactly what was in the voice note, it doesn't sound too incriminating, but I know exactly the like stomach feeling. And like, I mean, I'm sure ours aren't exactly the same, but like that like visceral dread is like, please just tell me if you got it.
Yeah, it was like not my favorite couple of minutes. The story I told Serena was I literally invited the wrong person to a surprise party. That was my text that went to the wrong person. So it's kind of like the example we always go back to of not remembering to turn off the stove or the curling iron or whatever, exactly. Where it's like, it is a spiral because you can't say like, well, it's never been done before because I have done it every once in a while. And that's true with this. Like I sent a voice text that I meant to send to one person to a group chat somewhere recently and it was fine. And I just had to own it and be like, oh yeah. But then I suddenly had to talk about a thing with five people that I was trying to talk to one person about, you know, and said something that like wasn't meant for the group about the other person. So I felt bad. So like, it has happened before. And so it was valid that I would be at the concert thinking like that this would be a bummer. And again, like stakes were pretty low. I would have felt a little bit embarrassed and ashamed if this person heard the way I described him to someone else. But ultimately, like it wouldn't be shocking and it would be fine and it might be funny and it might be, you know, it would have just been whatever, but I wouldn't have preferred it. It was not my intention. And you know, this has a real happy ending because then we left the show and I told her my anxiety because it was a friend that I could do that with. And then she confirmed indeed that she got the text and listened to it and told me what I said. And I was like, phew, and was able to like sleep soundly. So it was a real happy ending spiral. Which
oh,
are the
this
best
is such
kind.
A good happy ending. Truly the best time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Love that. Okay. Well, that one was tied up in a neat bow. I'm not sure we'll be able to do the same with mine. Okay. So to preface this, which I discussed in last week's episode, I believe, I'm just like going through it right now and it's getting better and it's a phase. I'm just like, I'm just in it and I'm tired and I just feel bad. So putting that out there, but I think it's important to acknowledge as I did last week, like sometimes it's just, it can feel really bad when you feel like you're backsliding. And I try not to think of it as backsliding anymore. I'm just, you know, I love a reframe and I'm just like, this is just, as I said, I'm just going through it. It's just a bad patch. It doesn't mean that like I'm going back into, you know, an eternity of feeling this way all the time. But I think something we haven't discussed a ton, I mean, we touched on it here and there, is that when you're in a bad phase with your anxiety, your health, whatever, work, like if you're in a funk of any kind, especially an anxious funk, the little spirals just get bigger, right? So something that wouldn't ordinarily be even a real spiral just becomes one. And it's really funny because one of the few things that Logan and I did we talk about this, about the cleaning of the apartment on the pod?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. I just didn't want to repeat myself again when I get super anxious. Actually, interesting, given that we just talked about this, when I get super anxious, my short-term memory gets really bad.
Yeah, that makes sense because you're just distracted.
Because my brain is like mushy and I'm distracted all the time. But I am very, very messy. And I have always been very, very messy. And I do think there's a difference between messy and dirty. Uh-huh. I'm like somebody who like tries on six outfits in the morning and then just leaves the outfits on the chair instead of putting them back in the closet. You know, like I let things like papers and books pile up on my desk until there's like mountains of them. I'm just very messy. And Logan is very neat. And I would say like twice a year, we have a big blow up about the mess. It's like the one true thing that we actually fight about. And my sort of general argument is not a good one. I'm like, this is like who I am. Like I've tried my whole life to be less messy. And sometimes I'm trying harder than others, but like I will succeed for like a week and then it will just go back to disaster. So usually after these like semi-annual blowups, I will do a big clean. But this happened, I guess, 2 weeks ago, where he was like, this apartment has just gotten to be a disaster. And he was, you know, like, we can't live like this. You have to clean the apartment. And this sounds like Logan's being like, this is not a gendered thing. Logan is wildly neat and always picks up after himself. And I do not. So this is just one of those instances where it is not an unreasonable ask. But then I like really started to look around and was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? Every room is a disaster. And there's just so much.
Overwhelming.
And it felt so overwhelming. And then I was thinking about that this week because I've been trying to chip away at it because I had this realization about this spiral because like, I was like, oh God, I have all this cleaning to do. Every room needs to be overhauled. I need to go through all the closets and like, it's going to take me so long and I don't have time for this. So much work to do and all of the things that we have in our heads. And then as I was like chipping, I decided to do, I spent 3 hours doing a baseline clean just to like clear the common spaces, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I've been every day doing a tiny bit, which is helping. I just need to sustain momentum. But I was thinking about this and this anxiety and overwhelm I felt after this cleaning discussion and when I was trying to start the clean and all the starting is often the hardest part, was I realized that I had also been, I had noticed this mess myself. It wasn't Logan pointing it out for the first time. And I had been annoyed by it, but not moved to actually change it. And there were other things like that I was procrastinating. We've talked about procrastinating the tiny things like going to the post office to return something or returning a text that you've been putting off or little tiny tasks that truly only take a minute or two and how they build up. And then it feels super overwhelming and they take up a lot of brain space. I've been procrastinating big things. For example, getting a physical. I am like way overdue for my dental cleaning. And also I have, you know, I've been changing out my retainers and like, I was supposed to pick those up like 4 months ago or something. And I just never did. Things like that are bigger. They're not 1 minute things. It's like appointment things and health things. And we talked about this last week, I'm like having some health stuff. I did get a physical this week and go to the gynecologist and like, that's great, but
should be celebrated.
There were a lot of
nice jobs
should be celebrated, but there were just a lot of big things that I was like, wow, you have procrastinated all of these things. And that is why, you know, the cleaning is bad, but that's why you feel, I think that's what really led to this sort of really anxious phase was I realized I have a lot of big things to do. Mm-hmm. And I still have to do my normal stuff.
Yeah. Too,
if that makes sense. And so I'm basically what part of my solution has been is I have been getting up earlier so that I can spend 20 minutes in bed with my coffee reading a novel because it makes me happy
So good.
And I've been doing that for like the past week and it's just been really nice, but also doing a cleaning task and a personal task every day. And I don't know if this is, I don't know if you ever feel this way, but working from home, I often feel guilty doing personal things, even though I'm afforded more flexibility than people who do not work from home. So it's counterintuitive. You'd think I would just do the personal things because I can work at whatever hours I want. And yet I feel guilty. And it's kind of strange because I have talked to Logan about this in the past, who goes to an office and, you know, always has. And he's always the one who doesn't miss dentist appointments and like books travel and all this stuff. I'm like, when did you book, you know, our flights to whatever? He's like, earlier today. And I was like, but you are at work. Like, why weren't you doing work? You know, like it's a weird mindset that
you're in trouble.
That, like, yeah, I'm gonna get in trouble. So I am now just trying to chip away at these things. And I think I got really tied up too in the social media rat race in terms of like, I have to post reels every day and I have to do all these stories and whatever. And I've been scaling that back so that I just have to keep spending less time on there until I accomplish all these personal things and then I can have it back.
Yeah.
Cause that just feels like I think part of this too is just my priorities feel misaligned and that makes me feel guilty. And guilt is a big trigger for me.
Yeah.
Oh, so big spiral.
Big spiral. I actually have so much I want to say about it. First of all, like, you're doing great and be gentle with yourself. And I love you. And I'm sorry that you're in the weeds with it all.
Thank you.
There's just a lot. But okay, about the where to begin, and I will keep this tight. I will try. It's funny, Serena, that you brought up. I want to talk about the novel in bed thing first. When you mentioned that, I thought of you this morning for some reason. That's so funny in like a psychic sort of a way because my friend Maddie, I do this workshop called In Process, and I have, you know, we've maybe talked about it on here, but I have guest artists come and they're people who have been on the podcast. Phoebe, who we just mentioned, did it one semester. And anyway, my friend Maddie did it recently. We just had her conversation last week. And so we were talking about habits and routines and creativity and how that relates to, you know, how she spends her time and her days. And she's one of the most creative people I know. And she said this thing that really resonated with me and maybe the other people in the class, but she was like, every morning I like to give myself a treat when I wake up. And she actually has this like really beautiful post on her Instagram. I'll send it to you after this, Serena, and I'll put it in the show notes for this. But there's this scene in an episode of Twin Peaks, I think, where I forget his name, but he plays Trey in Sex and the City. Anyway, his character is talking about this in this really beautiful way of like every morning life is hard, you know? So giving yourself a cup of coffee or like something special in the morning. And the way Maddie talks about it is like, yeah, sometimes it's like, I make myself tea. Sometimes I go on this walk. Sometimes I read for a little bit. Sometimes I get a croissant. Sometimes I'll like, you know, whatever it is, but it's something that she like genuinely enjoys. And it really hit me hard because I used to spend my mornings like, I have to do this certain ab workout and I have to get to this workout class when I lived in New York, like at 7 a.m. or I have to whatever. And like I have to meditate or I have to do these things. And like some of them were actually useful and I do think exercise is good and I do whatever. But in the pandemic, I started to, you know, hang out with these people who like basically have a party every morning and like get high on coffee and like talk for hours. And like, you know, and I think part of it is LA and part of it's just the people I surround myself with. But, you know, I was living with this person who like spent his mornings in this way that like he always gave himself a treat. And I really admire that. And I actually, since living alone, kind of went back to like, okay, well, I have to do my ab workout and then I have to do these like seven things before I'm allowed to leave. And recently I've been trying to like be more gentle with myself about like, it helps you get out of bed and it gives you more momentum in the day if you do something fun first thing in the morning. And I this morning, I actually like got up really early and got to the coffee shop pretty early. And I was the only one in the back. And I had this book of essays that I was reading and I like sipped my coffee and read for a while. And for some reason I thought of you, Serena, and I was like thinking of you reading. And I was like, I wonder if Serena ever reads during the day. And I was just like, because I know you read a lot and way more than I do, but I was like thinking of you during the day and like knowing, you know, I used to come over all the time and like, I'm like, yeah, you have so many things to do. But I like can't imagine you reading during the daytime. And
no, but I feel like getting up early makes it worth it. Cause you're right. I love that thought of like having a party in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you were staying at your brother's in town, we were talking mm-hmm. about this a little bit of like, you were like, oh, I love that. Like my brother walks and gets coffee and I did that with him. And I was like, dude, I do that every morning, you know? And like, I sent you a photo.
That is my life. And I was like, this is so nice.
Yeah. I have like a friend's version of like us sitting around at the coffee shop every morning, like, you know, and it is really nice. And I do feel like I am way less productive than I was in New York. And I'm also kind of like, I don't know if that was helping much anyway. So that's one thing I wanted to say. And I also get into these, like, it's like letting myself out of my apartment early and just like getting out and doing something I think is really good. Just mm-hmm. like getting fresh air and seeing people. And then I come back and commute, you know, like commuting to the apartment yes. is really helpful. And then like the cleaning thing, the messy thing. So I have that a little bit of like, I think I'm definitely more like Logan. Like I get a little bit OCD about putting things away. And what helps with that is like having like four things, but I will like overthink, you know, when I wake my apartment has like really intense light in the morning. And so if there's like a speck of dust on the floor or like when we were taking a picture in my mirror and you were like, the mirror is dirty. I was like, I just cleaned it with Windex. And apparently, hot tip, if you use newspaper, it gets rid of the streakiness. Cause I like went on a whole wormhole about it. But my point
never
is
never know like, what you might get on this podcast. Please,
I know. Free podcast, people. You're welcome. Anyway, I've had to like tone that down a little bit to, you know, living alone and be like, okay, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, I have to chip away at it because, and it's a really good analogy for life, what you were saying about the rooms. Like, you know, I have literally one room, but still I'm like, okay, I need to take everything out of my closet and put it back in again. And I need to like go through the cabin, you know, like I really mm-hmm. feel that probably similarly to Logan, where it's like, it's okay if there's like a piece of dust on the ground, or it's okay if like something's not in its place. And learning to like find the middle between like, because when it does build up for me, because I've gone through phases where like, you know, things do build up and then I'm like, I don't even want to do it. It gets worse there because it's like, I don't even know where to start. It's kind of like, I mm-hmm. get this way with my inbox a lot where it's like, I'm so behind that diving in seems so overwhelming that I don't even want to do that. And then I get more behind and it's this positive feedback loop. And anyway, I think you're doing great and you're chipping away at it. And the last thing I'll say, but I went to this comedy podcast. My friend Valen Pete had this. I have to send this to you because they with another couple, they talked about like couples and relationships. And Val and Pete were talking about messiness. And Pete is like the you in the relationship. And Pete was like, you can use this one for Logan, but their fight that they always get in about once a year, very similar to what you just described. She was saying that like about once a year, and it happened a lot in the pandemic. He likes to have his stuff like out in view, especially if it's something he needs, like his set list for comedy. Like he won't put it in the drawer in his pocket. He likes it like out on the table, and Val would like move it or like put it away, you know, or other yeah. things too. And he's like, well, if it's moved, I don't know where it is. And then I spiral, you know? So he likes to like have things out to see it. And then the bit from that night was, he's like, the floor is a place. The floor, like the toys can be on the floor. Cause it's the place. The floor is a place. The table is a place. You can say that.
Yes, seriously. That was the one accomplishment that I did succeed in doing is we had like the dining table which was our recording studio. Uh-huh. You know how there's like always shit on one end of it? Uh-huh. Like that's like where all the packages go and like yes. everything. And like Logan was like, just for once, I would like a clean table. And so I gave him a clean table.
Oh.
And it's been 2 weeks and the table is still clean.
Wow. Just so, for once, fingers like crossed. A clean table. I don't know why this is so surprising to me. Like I've been to your house and like, I remember there being stuff on the table, but this is going to sound so wild, but I just like, I guess I always thought it was Logan's. Like I didn't think that it was yours. Like I just did it.
I mean, I think everyone does. It's so funny that like another like very good friend of mine and her husband are exactly the same. Like she's very messy and he's very neat. So like when we see them, it's like they like really bond over this. And she's always like, yeah, when we're in public, or like when we have people over for dinner and they compliment like the organization and stuff, he's like, they always compliment her. And I have
so like, gendered.
She's a disaster. It's me. Yes. And he's so like, thank funny. You. The bookshelf does look nice. I did that myself.
That's hilarious. There was this episode of Dax Shepard where he was talking about being in an elevator with his wife, Kristen Bell, and she farted. And he was like, everyone in that elevator looked to me because they would just assume that it was me. And I was so mad.
Yes.
That's so funny.
I mean, that, yes, also true. I'm grateful for that gendered conception.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of gendered and antiquated systems, today's episode is societal pressures and anxiety. We're going to talk about life decisions, moving, choosing a home, aging, having it all together in quotes, feeling lost.
Yes.
So where should we begin? Should we talk about life decisions?
Life decisions. Yes. I mean, life decisions, obviously, I feel like is a catch-all for everything that we want to talk about. I mean, I feel like at this stage in my life, everybody told me that the 30s were amazing. I fucking hate the 30s. These are shit years. You have to figure out your whole life in your 30s. Like, I feel like your 20s, yeah, you don't really know what you're doing, but you're experimenting, you're having
fun.
And
nobody does.
Your body doesn't hate you because you're not old yet. So you don't appear all these weird aches and pains and whatever. And I just thought for some reason, like as I get older, I do appreciate the wisdom that I've accrued and the sort of strategies that I have built, not just for like managing anxiety, but for running my business, for being a friend and a wife and all of these things. And I do appreciate my age for that. But at the same time, I feel like I am now trying to figure out, where is my career going? Do I want to have children? Where do I want to live? Especially if I have children, like, where do I want to raise a family? What does it, you know, do I have to choose a forever home? All of these things, I don't think about them every day, but they are kind of in the back of my mind. And then there is kind of a direction in which small talk goes when you are in your 30s, especially as a married woman. I mean, I know, I feel like there are some people who may be listening who are like, I feel like people know not to ask women about when they're having babies or if they're having babies anymore. I would like to say that I do not think most of the world has adopted this approach. I get asked this, I mean, every fucking week, if not multiple times.
Are you serious?
Every Q&A that I... Yes. Every month for Q&A, that I do a Q&A on my Instagram every month, and multiple people ask, like, do you want kids? Are you like, when are you having kids for Q&A? I only answer it quarterly just because I know a lot of the same people watch Q&A and they don't want to have to listen to me talk about it every time, because the funny thing is, it really doesn't bother me on a personal level. It bothers me on a societal level because I don't have, as far as I know, fertility issues at the moment, but I've also haven't been trying to get pregnant. So I might, you never know.
Right.
But I do have a lot of friends right now who are really in it with the fertility stuff, and it fucking sucks. And I cannot imagine if one of them was asked, like, when are you having kids? Because they desperately want a child. So, and some of them are asked that, and they're like, I'm also jacked up on hormones. Like, I have to control myself not to like burst into tears and be like, I'm trying so hard, you know, like, whatever. It's just, I don't understand why people ask women this question still. But like on a personal level, I truly don't mind talking about it. And I feel like I've talked about it on the podcast before. Like, I've always been very unclear on whether or not I wanted children. I've never been somebody who's like, I definitely don't want kids. I think maybe I had a phase when I was much, much younger. Also in my phase, probably when my parents were getting divorced. I'm like, I'm never getting married. I'm never having children. Mm-hmm. But I was never, and like, I like kids, you know, but I also think I could live a very full, happy life without them. So that makes me feel very conflicted. And I feel like there aren't a lot of conversations about this, but it gives me a lot of anxiety that my like biological clock is ticking. And I think that that's a very common thing for women in their 30s. And I do think like, you know, now egg freezing is much more common. It's still very expensive. Some employers pay for it. Some don't. Some insurance covers portions of things like this. Some don't. It's a lot. And like, I don't really feel comfortable like talking about like my, you know, literal plans health-wise, but I will just say that like, it is something that's always in the back of my mind. And sort of like those, I compare it to like those, you know, sort of putting off going to the doctors and like needing to clean the apartment. Like it is this sort of mild, perpetual sense of overwhelm for me. Like, do I want a child? Should I be freezing my eggs this week? Like, what's happening? Like, do I have to make a decision now? What if I change my mind? Like, and like all of these are normal thoughts and feelings, at least based on my discussions with other women my age. Some people just have always wanted to be mothers, and that is, to me, I've always been a little jealous of that. I've always been also a little jealous of people who know exactly what they want to do with their careers. Like the people who in, you know, high school and college, like, I'm going to be a doctor. And I was like, oh, I'm so jealous. That sounds awesome for you. Mm-hmm. You know, because then you just get to pursue that dream. Or like, I want to be a mom. And then you become a mom. And that's so cool. Like, I just perpetually feel like I don't know what I want. And it, when it comes to these like big life things, like, do I want to, I want to move to California, but do I want to move to LA or do I want to go straight to Santa Barbara? Like, well, I miss New York. Like, mm-hmm. what if I decide I want kids, but whatever, for whatever reason, I can't have them. Like, should I have frozen my, all of these perpetual questions. And I think I don't think this is an anxiety thing. I think this is just like a normal life thing, but having anxiety makes it worse because I tend to fixate on these questions and the fact that I do not know the answers to them, because there is no right answer really, is just perpetually annoying, for lack of a better term, because you know that my anxiety pools in uncertainty. So. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. But like, I imagine the funny thing is, I think part of it has to do with small talk. So when I was, I started dating Logan, so young that I didn't get a lot of like, how's your love life questions, because, you know, I had a high school boyfriend and I like had some casual things in college and then I started dating Logan. So I didn't get that, but because we were dating for 6 years before we got engaged, like around the 2 year mark, you know, people are like, when are you guys getting engaged? And then as soon as you get engaged, it's like, when's the wedding? And then literally the second you put the rings on, they're like, when are you having kids? Yeah. And like, people say it never stops. Like my friends who have one kid or two kids, like they're always like, when are you having another one? And I think it's just filler conversation for when people panic and don't know what to talk to somebody about. It just seems like an easy question to ask, mm-hmm. but it's not a great one. Do you feel like people ask you about your love life?
Yeah. I think about this a lot. Like when I was working my full-time job, I was more aware of this, I think, because talking about relationships and family, I think ultimately is really fun. You know what I mean? Like I like talking about dating with people. I like talking about dating and breakups. It's like, it's a way to connect, almost like gossip in the sense of like, mm-hmm. it's a way, something we've all experienced and vulnerable a little bit, but also like at a distance in a way, you know what I mean? And so I think it's just, you know, it's part of our, for better or worse, it's part of our culture. And it's like one of the things that's like okay to ask about, which like, I don't think the kid thing, like, I don't think it's really okay to ask about. And I'm honestly shocked. I wasn't shocked that you got that question. Of course, like that's, I know that's the world we live in, but how frequently it does kind of shock me. But yeah, I mean, I think I don't get that question frequently here because I am with people who are my peers who kind of like know what's going on with me mostly. But I know the second I step foot in the Midwest, like the first thing I'm going to hear off the plane for Christmas mm-hmm. is like that, you know, and just like with people I haven't seen in a long time, you know, like old friends from New York, like will often be like, how's dating going? How's, you know, just because it's like a way to connect. And, you know, I think that that's fine. And depending on how I'm feeling that day, if I like had a great date, then I'm like, oh my God, let me tell you. Or if I'm like feeling really yes. lonely and sad and like you were saying, I think women do have this societal pressure that's more intense because of gender constructs and because of, you know, our bodies, if we do want to have a kid. And I'm still really unsure. And I think similar to you, feel the same way about having a kid of like, kind of always thought I would, then went through a phase of thinking I wouldn't, probably also related to my parents' divorce. Think I kind of want to have one now, but also might not be in the cards for me. I definitely don't want to do it by myself. I know I could, that might change. I don't know. And I think that is related to dating, like that feeling of like the pressure of like wanting to do it. But I think I do really want a partner. And I think that is something that like I felt embarrassed and ashamed to say. And when talking about dating, and I think it's cool to talk about a couple of things. A, being uncertain and unsure about a big life choice. And Kayleen Schaefer talks about this in her book, and she came on my podcast and spoke about it, because one of the things that I think our society kind of frowns upon isn't necessarily like not having kids or having kids. It's the uncertainty around it. And I think it's mm-hmm. kind of the same thing. Yes. Like you don't know, like you should at least know if you want to have kids or not, you know, like, and I think that that's so ridiculous. And that was her experience. And I want to bring up her book here because I think it's so relevant to this conversation, but it's called, But You're Still So Young, How 30 somethings are Redefining Adulthood. And what's cool about it is she wrote this very well-researched book, her first book, which I loved, about female friendship. It's called Text Me When You Get Home. And it, you know, won a lot of awards. And it's the celebration of friendship. And this book is about this traditional checklist of becoming an adult. And she found this old checklist from a sociologist that has existed for decades. It started in the 50s. And sociologists have long identified these markers of adulthood as, let's see if I can do it. Completing school is the first one. Leaving home, mm-hmm. establishing a career and becoming financially independent, getting married and having children. Not necessarily in that order, but that is the five markers of becoming an adult. And traditionally doing that by the time you're 30 is the signifier that, you know, being in your 30s, you should have completed some or all of those. And these signifiers in our 30s today are not the same because of, you know, repeated economic upheaval, you know, we are the first generation to live through multiple financial crises, like rising debt, mm-hmm. you know, like so much of us are in debt from school, decreasing marriage rates, like the divorce rates are way higher than fertility treatments, you know, mm-hmm. and then a more open-minded society that is shifting the definition of adulthood, which I think is really healthy, you know, but this book, But You're Still So Young, really cleverly shows how 30 somethings have, you know, rethought these five major life events. And, you know, Kayleen describes she weaves her journey of her 30s that's really nonlinear in her career path, financially, and, you know, her romantic ups and downs. And then eventually her thing was very similar to what you explained, Serena, of like not knowing if she wanted to have a kid. And then, you know, spoiler alert, I mean, it's not a novel, but she ends up having a kid, you know? And so it's like, yeah, it's, she follows five people in the book and tells their stories. And one is like, you know, a comedian, one is a works in landscape. Like, you know, they're all like very, very different. And anyway, so I think that that book is, if people like this episode, I think checking out that book or that episode of my podcast where we talk about that book, where you can kind of get a lot of it, it is really interesting. But I think the fact that we are redefining success and redefining our timelines in our 30s is really relevant to this conversation. And I think both dating and having kids are so related. And I think me just saying like, I do want to have a partner because I think I'm better when I do. It's harder. Like it's easier to be by myself. You can like, I don't have to compromise ever. I get to do whatever I want. I get to, you know, but it's very dysregulating. And I think me saying that out loud feels really vulnerable, but also I'm doing it because I think that it's a good thing for us to do and say of like, I don't know if I want to have kids. I do know I want to have a partner. Normalizing, you know, that feeling.
We are so proud that this season of Spiraling is presented by BetterHelp. Katie and I have been huge proponents of therapy always, but especially on this podcast. BetterHelp is a dream sponsor for us, and we are so thrilled to be helping to spread the word about their incredible therapy services.
Is there something that's needling you or holding you back that you really just want to talk out? I often feel this way, and I love therapy because I don't want to always have to put that burden on my friends and my family.
We love therapy so much. You know this.
So much.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating with them in under 48 hours.
It's not a crisis hotline. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which might not be locally available in many areas.
Yes. And the service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist whenever you need to.
You'll get a timely, thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's also more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available, which is so great.
I love that. And I love that you can change therapists because, as we've talked about, it might take a minute to find the right one for you. Yes. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read so many testimonials that are posted daily.
There are truly so many testimonials and they're very heartwarming. Visit betterhelp.com/spiraling. That's better H-E-L-P, and join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. So if you are a therapist, perhaps check that out. And we have a special offering for Spiraling listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/spiraling. That's 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/spiraling.
We love BetterHelp.
Thank you.
Everything you said is so spot on, and it is liberating to an extent to know that we have more quote unquote flexibility these days. But I don't really understand why, and I don't know if this is just me or other people, but like why I torture myself with these bigger decisions where I've always wanted to be one of those people that's like, well, it'll just work itself out. You know?
Yeah.
And people always say things like, when you know, you know. When that comes to finding your partner, knowing if you want to have kids, all these things, I'm like, but I don't know if you, when you know, you know. I don't know. I hope I will have eventually the feeling about children one way or the other that I felt about Logan, which wasn't a like.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have that feeling with Logan?
It was just more of a, I am very content and I would like to sustain this feeling, if that makes sense. I truly felt And I can't pinpoint a moment there. Some people are able to pinpoint a moment where they were like, I knew this was my person. I don't think that's my personality. I just think that over time, especially because I was so cautious about marriage because of my own parents, I think the level of like happiness and, as I said, contentment and security that I felt with Logan, like the knowledge that I wanted that to be my life, was what sort of made me feel confident in getting married. And that, to be fair, that was quite early on. But again, it like wasn't like one moment or one day that I woke up and was like, yep, sure, he's the one. It was like an accumulation of lots of different good things. And I just felt at peace with that knowledge that like, this was it. And I hope that I get to that place one way or the other with children where I'm like, this is it, you know, yeah, like, and it's a strange, I think I feel less stressed out by the concept of, you know, I have less anxiety surrounding where should I live and things like that. Because to me, that portion of life is malleable. I can move. If we're not happy somewhere, we can leave, you know, and that provides me with comfort. So like the uncertainty there is sort of buffered by the fact that I can always change my mind. I think when it comes to marriage or having babies, or I feel this way about my career too. Sometimes it's like, I have to remind myself that my job, like my, you know, physical location is also malleable. And I am a big believer that we have so many phases, and I'm a perfect example of that. In the past, you know, 10 years that I've been self-employed, I have had many different iterations of my career in the sense that my days have looked very different. I have incorporated different things. There were years that were devoted to book writing. The past, you know, year and a half have been primarily devoted to teaching. There were years without social media. There were blogging years. There were private chefing years. And I do take comfort in the fact that I have been able to move and shift. But sometimes when I feel like I'm in a somewhat stuck phase in my career, or I'm feeling stagnant, I wonder if I should be making a huge move. And I feel like we've talked about this a bunch. There's always a part of us that's like, should we get a fucking corporate job? and I don't know. I wonder if there's something. I think some people live to work and some people work to live. And I think what weirds me out about myself is I'm somewhere in the middle. I have always felt that I need to be working really hard to be happy and to have a solid sense of self-worth. And I have in more recent years redefined my definition of success personally and professionally that has helped me just sort of get through the day to day with less anxiety and not focus so much on arbitrary milestones. But there is still this weird pressure, I think, from, I don't know if it comes from me, like I literally just stuttered saying if it comes from me, or whether it's external pressures, maybe it's a combination of both. I mean, I'm always hyper aware of projecting my own thoughts about myself onto others, but I feel like for whatever reason, sometimes things like writing a book feel really, to other people, seem like a bigger deal. And they think I'm more successful because I'm working on a book. And I know that me working on a book means that I'm basically doing a vanity project and like gonna have to sacrifice making more money that year and like doing things that I want to do personally and professionally so that I can test 125 recipes. But for whatever reason, other people see that as more successful and more impressive. So I feel the odd pressure to like start another book so that I feel validated and calmer about what I'm doing with my life because it's something that's more understood by other people. Does that make sense? That wasn't the most succinct.
Yeah. No, it does.
Like ultimately, like I know that doing another book is not necessarily the right business move, but I feel the pressure to do it, which feeds into my anxiety because I know that people understand it more than social media brand partnerships and virtual mm-hmm. teaching and things like that. It is a more societally, it's more impressive.
Right.
So I think it's a better way. Thing.
Yes. Definitely. I felt that way. Like I always gave this example when my book came out, it was like the first time that my mom was like, you know, understood that thing I do outside of my full-time job. Like, oh, maybe keep doing yes. that. That seems to be like, where, like, maybe that is not some weird hobby, you know? But I think to your point, there's something, I don't know if I got this from Kayleen's book or if I heard this somewhere else, but the one choice you can't take back is having a kid. That's the one choice that like, it's going to be, if you have a kid, it's going to be your kid for the rest of your life. You can't get rid of it. You know, it's the only permanent choice where every other choice, like where you live, you can reroute and like, yeah, it might cost you more money or time or whatever, but you can do it with your career. Same thing with, you know, who you marry. Of course, obviously, you know, that we would prefer for these things to not change, but they always can reroute. You know? And so that's why the kid one is such a big deal because it's biological. There's a timeline on it. There's so much societal pressure or, you know, answering to that. And it's something that, you know, you literally can't change and is a really big deal, really big financial and personal and physical investment. And it's like so intense. So I feel like that one is really, really big. And related to so many different things that I just want to like put aside for a second because it's so different from all the other ones. But
yes,
with what, even though I believe that that's true and that's the only choice you can't change and reroute, just like with the GPS, right? Like if you make a decision and it wasn't correct for you, just like a GPS, if you make a wrong turn, it'll reroute you. And sometimes the reroute is like not that much different time wise. And sometimes it adds 20 minutes and that's a real drag. Or sometimes it like ends up being like, oh, well that if I hadn't gone this way, I wouldn't have seen this cool view. And like, you know, so I think that's a good analogy for life and work of like, you know, just make a choice, move forward and it'll reroute you. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. However, I think like I'll use the example of work. I think I've been going through this a lot. I think that's probably the biggest one for me that feels most intense right now of like, because it feels most dire and it feels most in my control where it's like the dating one. It's like, I'm trying, I am dating. I'm like open to it. I'm not investing as much time as a lot of people that I know, you know, like I know some people who really make it a full-time job and are like on the apps and going on dates and doing things. And I'm not doing that at all. But I am putting myself out there and I have been on the apps and I am like trying, right? Which I think is important. And we've gotten a lot of questions about dating anxiety and, you know, we can cover that more maybe in a Q&A episode, but I'll just say this. Yeah. I'm anxious before every single date. Like I'm pretty great at talking to people, but you know, it's there. So that probably makes it slightly more challenging, but you know, it's just hard and it doesn't feel in my control where it's like my work also isn't really in my control, but there's a lot more that I can do about that than, you know, finding a romantic partner, you know? And I think without having the support of a romantic partner, close relationship with my family and, you know, coworkers other than you, Serena, like I don't really have any support in that. And I think I do have a lot of support in my life. I didn't mean to say that, but the rerouting thing with work is tough because it's not like I can be at this point in my life at 31, be like, you know what? I'm going to make a career pivot. I can, and I can do different things within my career. And I could literally go back to school right now and become a scientist or become a doctor or do anything and just do it later in life. Like I know that is possible for sure. But going back to the GPS analogy, like I don't know if I can do that. Like that would add so much more time and money. And I think, and I have to support myself. So kind of, I don't have the option. You know what I mean? Like I need to kind of make where I follow the dream that's following me, you know, like I have to kind of make yes. what I'm working with work for me at this point, or that's what I'm choosing to do. And maybe, you know, if I had the support of someone else, or like not financially, but like emotionally, or like maybe I would feel like I could like totally, you know, reroute. But right now, you know, I kind of have to use what I have in front of me. And today I was talking about this idea I had for consulting on a project. And basically I had had a musician that I really love on the podcast. And my friend was like, wow, that's so cool. Like you should do more of that. And you should like maybe do this and that. And like gave me some ideas of things I could do that are more of like this work thing that had been really exciting and great for me. And I was like, yeah, I would love to, but I don't have any connections like there. Like I don't have any, you know, network. And I actually feel like I have a very robust network of people and connections, you know, at this time in my life that I've built up over the last 10 years, but I don't have any in that area because actually a lot of my connections are with people in wellness and with people in like things that I like worked in for the first part of my career. Like that's kind of where my connections are now. So it's not like I can't build those up, and I can, but it's just not where my relationships are. And so that's an example of like, sometimes you have to like sleep in the bed that you've made, or it is a little bit, it's out of our control. All these decisions really, like even the kids thing, it's like, I might really decide when I turn 33, that suddenly I really want to have a kid. And then I could not find a partner and just be single. And then I could be like, all right, well, I don't want to do it on my own. Or I could find a partner and then I could have like massive infertility thing, you know? So like, I know that's bleak, but like, that's mm-hmm. just the reality of the situation, that like a lot of these big life decisions are out of our control. Like I never thought I would move to California, but I'm happy I did. And it wasn't in my control, you know? And a lot of my work decisions have just been dire of like, okay, I have to support myself. Here's how I'm doing this. And same thing with everything else on this list. I think a lot of this comes from, and I just want to like acknowledge that, because I think it's like, we can talk about this all day of like, oh, all these choices and it's, you know, all whatever we decide, and it's just society's pressure. But I think part of it is society's pressure. And part of it is like financial. It's like, it's not even an option for us to do a lot of the things that our parents did of like working the same jobs, because, you know, we've lived through a global pandemic and they didn't. We've lived through financial crises that they haven't. Yep. And so we have different ideas of even what's possible for us. And I think even with dating, like this is kind of a tangent, there's so much choice now that I think it's making it more challenging for people to like sit still with someone for a while. And people are getting married later. And, you know, even if I like someone and they like me back, like maybe they'll be like, well, there's like four more people that might be cooler than you on Raya. So I'm going to just like give that a go first. You know, like there's just, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty that's out of our control.
I could not agree more. And I think that it's, for most people, it is not realistic to just change jobs when you aren't happy at work. And I think that there are a lot of reasons too, when it comes to people who want to have a child, who maybe don't have a partner and aren't financially able or emotionally able to do that on their own. There's also people who have lots of reasons for staying in marriages where they're unhappy. You know, there's so many things. I think you're completely right. It's not always societal pressure at all. I do think this ties back into our discussion of the 24-hour news cycle and how much time we spend on screens and social media and all this stuff that's made it really sort of difficult for all of us to live in the present and also not compare our life choices and where we are as humans, like in the course of our lives, to other people who are the same age or in the same career, whatever it may be. And I just think that adds another layer of complexity and possible anxiety to our day-to-day life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to just...
It's hard out there.
Yeah, managing our nervous system within all of the uncertainty the best we can and managing our anxiety.
Yeah, and I think at a certain point, it's a very, you know, when it comes to certain things, you can always change your mind too, which I know we talk about changing course, but like also just changing your mind and not holding yourself to things that you said you would do or what you wanted at a certain life phase, like allowing that to really be flexible is so huge. I think we talk about flexibility so much in terms of managing our anxiety, just because same thing, you know, sometimes things work and then they don't work anymore. And we just always have to be trying new things and adjusting our cocktails. And I think like part of that is I said to Logan, like right before Do Diet Dinner Time came out, I was like, I'm going to give this book everything I have for 1 year on the promotion front. Basically, I was going to go on this book tour. I was going to do as many TV appearances as possible. I was going to meet with everyone. I was going to milk it for all it was worth. And I basically got to do that for 3 months, right? Before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is I was like, and if that book is not a big success, I'm going to reevaluate what I'm doing with my life. And that sounds dramatic, but I didn't mean, you know, like I'm going to quit being in food. I was just like, I'm going to reevaluate like the direction that I want to go and maybe focus on some new things. And I did end up focusing on new things. Now I'm teaching and doing stuff like that, that I didn't anticipate at the time. But I think even if the pandemic hadn't hit, I don't know that the Do Diet Dinner Time would have been like, we've talked about this before. It was not as big of a success as the original Do Diet. And that always makes me sad because I just personally think it's such a better book. But I don't think it would have made any difference if I had had those extra 9 months to promote it. Maybe it would have. But I also think that even though I said that, like I'm going to reevaluate and do whatever, the pandemic did force me to reevaluate. But I think I probably would have thought that was a little nuts of me to be like, I'm going to give this my all. And if it doesn't work, then that means that like, I shouldn't do any more books and I should maybe go get a slightly more traditional job just for peace of mind and security and all of this stuff. I think I would have changed my mind because as soon as it came out, I was like, all right, I don't think this is going to be a huge commercial success, but I really enjoy this process of touring and marketing and all this stuff. And I would do it again, even if it wasn't a financial success.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
that's such a good
point. Again, that's a privilege. I still have to do other things to make up for that. But I think it's okay to like things that you like and change any, I don't know, arbitrary goals that you've set for yourself, deadlines, things like that. I don't know. I think also it's a hazard that a lot of us, when we were young, I think we're like, I'm going to be married by the time I'm 30, or I'm going to have, I also think those 30, you know, like the 30 under 30 lists, those things drive me crazy. But I do think just based on the fact that so many people that I went to college with and stuff have been on those lists, I do remember having so many discussions with friends in our late 20s who are like, I don't think I'm going to get on 30 under 30. And they had built up all of this stress and anxiety over getting on some list that honestly, I don't want to say it's rigged, but like there are so many successful people that are not on those lists. You know, like I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up in certain things that don't actually matter that much too. And I'm very guilty of that.
Yeah. Like, it's like ego, right?
You know,
it's like,
you want, it's, yeah. Yeah. It's ego. Exactly.
I mean, I felt that way, like about my, you know, I think I feel that way about my book of like, when I got that, I was really young and it was kind of a fluke. And I feel really grateful that that happened. And I haven't had a professional success even close since. And, you know, that was like almost going to be, I mean, not quite, but close to it. It'll be soon a decade away. And I hope I write another book and I hope I get to do, you know, more things or pivot completely or who knows. But also not in my control. And I think, you know, this conversation becomes a bit esoteric and becomes a bit spiritual at this point, where it's like, you know, this is why all the world's religions exist, because of uncertainty. Like, we are the only species that's aware that we're going to die. Like, we know our mortality and we want to fit things in, and we have egos too, you know. Like, it felt good to like have be written about on the internet, and it felt good to like suddenly have some followers, and it felt good to be seen and recognized, you know, like all of those things, and get validation from the people who I wanted it most from, you know, like my parents or whatever. And then I've continued to have moments of that where I'm in my ego, where it's like, okay, well, if I'm just in this group of friends, then I will, if this person is my boyfriend, then I am cool and interesting. And I'm not just, you know, this like person from the Midwest who like was kind of weird and like didn't have friends, you know, like I'm able to attach myself, but that's all ego, you know. It's like feeling okay as you are without any of these markers of success is truly the like spiritual practice, right? Or like, that's the like self-growth. Yes. That's like what we're like working on. And the other point that you made that I want to underline is the part about, it's so cheesy, and you didn't say it in a cheesy way, but I think what you were alluding to is that it has to be about the goddamn journey. You know, like, you might not get the bestseller list, or you might not get the like traditional marker of success, but if you enjoy writing the book and it helps one person, like, great. Then who cares, you know? Or you're not attached, you know? And I think it's the same thing. Like, this podcast is a great example. You know, I enjoy the journey of this podcast, you know?
Yes.
I enjoy doing this with you. It is not an ego thing at all. We like make nothing from it, you know?
No.
And I think
clearly.
Yeah. I think it's like, if we didn't like doing this, we wouldn't be here. And I think ultimately, like,
wouldn't do it.
Right. Yeah. Every project should be like that. You know, Let It Out is like that for me. It's like, it's not this huge money-making thing. It's kind of the only thing I've done consistently. So I keep doing it, but you know, I like doing it. I like that. I was talking to Carrie Lynn of Cat Beauty. She was last week's guest on Let It Out. And she's, you know, she just turned 51, and she had a really great perspective on essentially this, but she was talking about, people think they want fame. They think they want notoriety, but what they really want is access. They want to be able to connect with people. They want to be part of something, you know? And I don't know, maybe that's not even really related to what we're talking about, but it was a real watershed moment to me. And it's like, okay, well, this podcast gives me access, you know, like my podcast allows me to meet people, connect with people through the listeners and through the guests. And this podcast with you gives me access to more people, you know, in this space. And so I think if you do things that feel good to you, that's like your North Star. That's your guiding force of like, how can I make this fun? How can I make this feel good for me? Because that's letting go of the outcome. That's letting go of attachment. That's letting go of expectations. And the more you can do that, the more you can move forward. And you might, it's sustainable.
It's living in the present.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's like anxieties.
It's presence. Yeah. And I think that's being present is what kills anxiety. And
100%.
What I have been doing to tackle all of these things that I feel anxious about that may or may not actually be societal pressures, they're probably just internal pressures. But the one thing that I'm constantly working on in and out of therapy is building that sense of existential confidence that we've talked about throughout this entire podcast journey, where my sense of self-worth and happiness isn't tied to a single thing or professional success or happiness in my relationship or what other people think of me. It's just that I can feel at peace with the fact that I am who I am, and I am trying my best, and we never really know where we're going. I think that's the thing, is that I think the through line through this entire podcast and through discussions on anxiety is like, we cannot predict the future, and we try so hard, and that's what gives us anxiety.
Yeah. Anytime we are taken out of the present moment, you said all of that so well. That's anxiety, you know, like you can't, anxiety and being present with what you're doing can't exist at the same time. And it's really hard with these big life things because we feel like we want to try to control or we feel like we want to try to move it forward in some way. And, you know, in some ways you can, like we can take action. Like, you know, this would be a very different conversation if I was like, I really want a partner. And I was like, well, I'm just staying home every single night. I don't do anything. I never leave my apartment and I don't have any of the dating apps on my phone and I'm not trying, you know, like that would be a different conversation of like, you do all the things you can do and then let go of the outcome. Like that's really all you can do. And I think detaching our self-worth from outside factors and successes and just markers of like, not even successes, because it's not like a success to, you know, find a partner or like, you know, just doing things that are, you know, not necessarily in a work success sort of a way. But my point is, I think with all of that, it's less about finding your self-worth outside of that. And obviously like more about like feeling okay as yourself without any of those things and just as you are. And that's really, really hard. And I don't think we're meant to do that alone. And I think that's why I give so many compliments to my friends, because I'm a words of affirmation person and I need to be reminded. And I think we're meant to, I think we're relational beings that are meant to be reminded, because it's really hard to remember that we're okay as we are. So that's why we're all addicted to these markers of success, you know, like I've had so many of them where it's like for a really long time for me, it was like, if I can just be the thinnest person in the room, then I am okay for some reason, because our society puts that on a pedestal. And like, that's one thing I'm pretty good at. I know how to do it. I can do that, you know? And then I was like, all right, well, that's fucking me up. So I can't do that one. What else have I got? And it's been a lot of, it's been a plethora of other things. It's
like,
okay, well, I'll be the most funny, or I'll be the most successful, I'll be dating the coolest person, or I'll be in the group of people, you know. It's like we're constantly vacillating to these different markers to make us feel worthy, and ultimately like they're all fleeting. We have to figure it out for ourselves.
Ugh, we do. Stay tuned, everyone, for how we figure them out.
Or tell us, because if you've succeeded, let us know.
No. That was really beautifully said. And I think that it's just important. I think the reason that we wanted to have this discussion on the podcast initially is we don't, especially with this episode, we don't have clear-cut advice other than doing our damnedest to live in the present. In the present. I literally cannot speak today. In the present.
You're doing great.
But I do think that these are thoughts that a lot of us have. And I do think that they are huge sources of anxiety for a lot of people. And I think that these things are very similar to like the episode that we did last season about life transitions too, like moving and stuff like that. I think these are big things. And it's important to talk about the fact that they can, even if they're not at the forefront of your mind, build up and just needle you a bit on a regular basis. So if you're feeling that, you are not alone always. Yeah. Did we cover all the things we wanted to talk about? We didn't really talk about like aging.
Yeah, but I think
it's okay. I don't really feel bad about that right now. That's not a source of my anxiety.
I think it's just related to all of this. It's like, you know, it's obvious. It's very obviously a part of finding a partner. I think it's like something that is connected to that. It's connected to children for sure. And I think it's connected to work too, where it's like what I was saying about like, if I wanted to have a totally new career path right now, would I feel comfortable starting as an intern at 31, working my way up, going back to school? Maybe, but yeah, it'd be harder than trying it at 24. So yeah, it's part of, it colors all of this, I think.
It definitely does.
Okay. Well, highest.
Yes. Do you have some ready or do you want me to go first?
Can you go first?
Okay. So this week, let's see. Okay. So last weekend, I was in Maine for one of my best friend's weddings, which I talked about last week. But the actual wedding itself was definitely my highest. So I'm clearly not doing them in order. She was the most beautiful bride and it was just like so nice. And it was not nice weather, but it was still awesome. my higher, because we'll go backwards. Let's see. Oh my God. We started watching Squid Game. I'm late to the party. I'm always late to like the popular shows, but oh my God, I just want to watch Squid Game. Do you know what I'm talking? Have you heard of Squid Game?
Yeah, everyone's like talking about it, but I don't know.
You will not like it. Okay. You will not like it. Do not watch. Very violent, but just like kind of a blowing my mind, and I just want to watch it. So we've watched, I don't know, we've watched 5 episodes this week, and I have nightmares about it, but arguably worth it because it's some of the best TV I've watched in a long time. And then my high is probably my coffee and reading situation.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try and keep it rolling. I really like that.
I love that. Okay, those are amazing. Let me think what mine are. So I'll say that concert, just more about that. It was really, it's great to see live music, and I had such a nice time with my friend, and that's always such a high. So that was lovely. And a couple of friends, we all moved here from New York, and they live on my street. And last weekend they had a garage sale, and that was really nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We just like stood outside and drank coffee, and I brought over donuts, and I bought a new rug and, you know, sold some clothes, and it was just really sweet and like fun to be outside. And it's so beautiful out here. It's just sunny and like warm every day and gets a little chilly at night. And that's been really, really good. And I guess highest would be, I've just been feeling really like good and I feel like this is always my highest, good and loved and supported by my friends. And it's just nice to have that, you know. I think when I'm feeling down and when I'm feeling a bit behind, I can get really depression-y, and knowing that like not everything is perfect in my life, and there are things that like I go up and down in, but knowing that I'm okay and I have people I can talk to about it, and I'm not alone because I live on a different coast than my family, and I, you know, live in an apartment by myself. And I think I can feel like I'm floating, and that really is like fuel for the fire for my depression. But having like a lifeline to people always makes me feel so much better. So that has just been especially nice this week, like going on walks with friends and just talking and listening. And yeah, there's something about like walking and talking with friends that is a real high right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the best. Those are good ones.
Oh, well, I love you. I know you have to go teach. Let's disclaim.
Yes, please. Are we doctors, Katie?
Absolutely not. Clearly.
We are not medical professionals of any kind. We're just two friends sharing our experiences with anxiety.
And if you are struggling, you are not weird or broken or damaged, and you don't owe anyone an apology for your mental health. And
and we also encourage you to talk to a professional.
Right.
We really messed up that disclaimer, but we love you.
Yeah.
We will see you.
Therapy. We love therapy, and we love you. Talk to a therapist.
We love you. Talk to a therapist. Bye.